Okay, why don't you start out and just give us your name and maybe what years you worked up here, and we'll just go from there.
Okay. My name is John Peterson, and I think I came up here in 1937. Checking with those photographs in your album, it seems like 1938 it was pretty well completed, and I was here when they were really just starting. I was a student at the time. I was about 19. I was a student at Cornish Art School in Seattle, and running low on money, a buddy and I decided that we would start from Darrington and hike over the mountains to see what we could find over here. And when we arrived, we kind of astounded the construction superintendent, a guy named Charlie Dolphy, who couldn't believe that we'd come in from that side. He said, "You're supposed to come in through Chelan. That's where the union hiring hall is." But he was pretty tickled with that, and so he said, "Well, go over and see the foreman," and we went to work. I think the first building I worked on was the hospital. The main dining hall was already in, and I believe most of the company officials' houses were in. And we just went from there. One of the present construction people here, one of the young men, asked me how many carpenters were working here then, and I find it difficult to pin it down. I thought perhaps 30, and he wondered if they were working on the whole camp at once or a building at a time, and it seemed to me they kind of arranged us in groups. There were roofing crews, flooring crews, those that put the cellotex up, and then of course the framing, and the carpenters that were skilled at putting up the pole frames.
Do you recall how long it took to build the village? You say that when you arrived here, a portion was already built.
And yes.
Do you recall, you know, how many months or how many years it took really to complete the facility as such?
Well, I'm going by what I saw in your albums and trusting those dates. In 1938, it seemed to be essentially completed. And I'm assuming I was there in 1937, so I would say 2 years.
And were you here just the 1 year of
1937? Yes, I came in May, and I remember we left to go home for Christmas, so it was about 6 months, I guess.
Now, they had a sawmill here.
Yes.
And was all of the lumber cut that was used in the buildings, or was some of it brought in, do you recall?
No, I really can't say. I was impressed with the fact that they did have a sawmill and had seemed to be cutting most of their material. I don't recall any being brought in, but then again, one of the young men asked me if they prepared the shingles here, and at first I said yes, because I worked on a crew that prepared those cedar shakes that are on a lot of gable ends, but those shingles, as I look at them, seem machined, and I can't be certain of that, if they did make them here.
What other jobs did you have, or what were you just on one crew during the months that you were here?
Well, I started out as a carpenter's helper and just kind of stacking lumber and pulling nails. And then finally I got onto a roofing crew, and we did a lot of the sheet metal roofs, probably most of them. Three-man crew, the lead man, and I was just one of the assistants. And then we were put on flooring also, so we laid a lot of that heavy brown material that is being taken off now, I guess. And I remember we put in the linoleum in the number one house. It was Mr. Lipsy's, the superintendent's house then. So this was basically these two, the flooring and the roofing crews.
Where did you live while you were employed?
Well, they call it number three now. It's that one right behind the mess hall.
In one of the lodges?
Yes, one of the...
And that was already completed when you arrived then.
Now there, you've got me. I can't be sure. I must have stayed in number one. As I remember, only number one was completed.
Oh, yeah.
And I may have stayed in there, and then as they completed others, we moved in. I remember we moved into a brand new place. I'm a little foggy there, yes.
Now when you was working here, and when they were constructing the village, were they in production at all in the mine?
Or yes.
They were?
So yes.
They were actually hauling ore?
Yes.
At that time?
So. That's right.
Yeah.
And there were miners and construction workers mixed in the buildings. I was often paired with a miner. They seem to come and go. Yeah.
Did you ever go underground, or did you get a chance to see the mine itself or the mill? Do you have any recollections of any of the mining activity as such?
Yes. When the weather turned bad in the fall, I suppose it was when the first snows came, they shut down most of the construction, let the crews go, and so my partner and I decided we would apply for a job in the mine, and we got it. As being young, husky, eager workers, we got on as muckers, and so we did spend the last 2 months in the mine, and I got quite a picture of the activity under there.
What were some of your reactions like, even entering the mine? Did you ride in on the train, take the elevators? Do you recall what elevations or what levels they were working on at that time?
Well, now I'm a little hazy on this, but these terms come to my mind. I remember we walked up when we went to work. We crossed the river, Railroad Creek, and then walked up a long stairway through the
mill,
and then over to the dry room, where we put on our grungy old diggers, tin pants, and thermal underwear, rubber boots, and then we went over to the end where all our lights were being charged and picked out our light. And then we walked into the mine at that time. I wondered why they didn't ride us in, because it's a long hike in there. It seemed to me it was at least a mile just straight into the mountain. And I assumed it was because they wanted to keep the ore coming out production, that since it was a single track, they didn't want to waste time. But anyway, we'd be walking in and we'd see the shift coming out, all these lights twinkling. And it took me quite a while to get used to that, because as soon as you get into the mine, you're immediately aware of the smell. It's kind of, I don't know whether it's the ore body or what, it's sort of a very particular kind of smell. And as you go in further and further, you're conscious of this crushing weight of the mountain above you. Of course, they say it was a very safe mine, one of the safest. No cribbing or timbering needed. Hard rock, excellent. Miners from Butte and other places said this is a good mine, safe. But we just walked and walked and walked and finally came into the cage room, or the, I guess it was called a cage, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And this was really quite a scene. It impressed me for the first week or two, because I had never seen anything like it. It's dark except for all these lights flashing, and the foreman, the main foreman, the man named Miles, I believe. Do you recollect that name?
No, I don't.
He lived in that number 13 or 14, I think. Anyway, he got up on a raised platform and started assigning crews, and they would get on the cage until it filled up, and then the thing would go bounding out of sight, of course going up in the mountain instead of down. And finally, when the last of us were left, we were the lowest of the low, the muckers, and then we would generally be assigned to the stope or some place where there was a lot of rock to shovel. And I remember my first ride on the cage was quite an experience, because I wasn't prepared for when it takes off. It just goes up in a great bound and then kind of goes back and then up in another bound until finally all the tension is out. And so we generally went up to what I recall is the 1500 level. That seemed to be the main level up there, where you went up or down or out. And of course, one of my principal jobs, along with most of the other muckers, was to prepare for the weekly Big Bang, where they enlarge the stope by running drifts, raises, windses, and gopher holes, fox holes, just a maze of tunnels underneath, and then loading it with this high percentage, I think it was 40 or 60% dynamite in big cordwood sticks that we had to relay up there, spend a whole shift or two. Saturday.
They blasted just one time a week?
Well, this was the main stope blast, yes. Ordinarily, the mine operated 24 hours, three shifts, so they blasted rounds between shifts. As the miner completed his round and had it all loaded, he would run the wire out, and then we would wait. I think a whistle sounded, and he had to account for all his men, and we had to be safe, and then each miner would blow his round out. And this was then the next shift would come in and have to clean it out and prepare for the next one. So, but these were just minor blasts to run the various drifts. The big one, the really production blast, was on Sunday morning, as I recall. And they cleaned, everybody had to leave the mine then, and then they touched off this tremendous blast that would shake your bunkhouse, and if you were outside, you could see the dust come boiling out of the different levels there, out of the portals. It was quite impressive, and then often we were assigned shortly after to go up there and clean up, and of course you could come to the end of a drift you'd worked in, and then you'd look out in this vast cavern. Your light couldn't even penetrate the other side. It was awesome.
Did you go out of the village at all during the May to December when you were here? Did you travel outside, or did you stay here that entire time?
We stayed here the entire time, yes.
Was there any pattern for people that lived here or worked here? Did they go out, you know, like once every 2 months, or did some people just stay here over a longer period of time like you did? Or?
Well, the patterns I saw were, of course, I was with the bachelor miners staying in the bunkhouses. A lot of young people, a lot of Washington State University mining engineers that were working here to get experience and earn money. And this was generally the crowd that I got in with. And the professional miners were a pretty rough crew, the bachelors, that is. They were boomers. They'd come and go. They'd been to Butte. They'd been to Anaconda and Idaho, all the big mines. And they seemed to be able to stay for a period of time. I remember I roomed with one guy who stayed about 6 weeks, and then he just had to get out. And, of course, they could go down by Lucerne there to the local body house there, where that seemed to suffice for some of them. But he went clear to Seattle and spent about 2 weeks there and just got it all out of his system and then came back all kind of beat up and ready to go again. And this seemed to be a fairly typical pattern. But then, of course, there was another element that were just starting to populate the married people's town up there. And they were a different breed altogether. They seemed to be the ones that generally took the contract mining, the more difficult ones where they could take a risk and make more money. And they were building their own houses. Apparently, the company didn't furnish anything. Some built it with logs. And I know they often hired us to come up and help them put on roofs or do whatever. And I kind of admired them. I knew some of them. And then there was the young people who lived up in Honeymoon Heights.
Mm-hmm. I knew now, during the construction period, did you have any amount of equipment other than just the normal carpentry equipment? Did they use heavier equipment, cranes or anything like this to help assemble, or was it pretty much handwork, hand labor?
It seemed to be all hand labor, as near as I can recall. I don't recall any of those cherry pickers or those big cranes that you see now. Yeah, it kind of surprises me when I think about it.
And what about, the mill was in operation, so that was all complete. The construction had been completed on that,
yes.
So you didn't see any construction at that level or anything?
No, that was in full operation.
The materials that they did bring up for the various buildings, I assume that came up on their own barge. And was there any regular schedule for the delivery of material, or did you ever have problems waiting for material?
I don't recall any. I'm sure there must have been a system, but I was unacquainted with that part of it, and I really know very little about it.
What did you do after you went back then? Did you go back to Seattle and back to school?
Or? Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And what have you been doing since that time?
Well, I went back to school and completed my degree, and then I went to New York eventually to work in the advertising field as an advertising illustrator for 2 years, and then World War II came up upon us, and I enlisted in the Alaska Communication System and served up there for 4 years in Alaska. And then after the war, I purchased a little tract on Hood Canal in Washington, western Washington, and which is where we're living now, by the way. and stayed there just trying my hand at various things. I was kind of trying to find myself because I felt I didn't want to go back to advertising, that I saw that as sort of a dead end. A lot of money, but not really ultimate satisfaction. So I tried my hand at logging, at oystering. I ran an oyster plant there for 2 or 3 years. And all the marginal kinds of things that support people there. But when I got married at this time, I found that it just wasn't enough, so I moved to Seattle and started a construction business. And my wife now, when we look around here, she says, well, you learned most of your skills here. And I realized that this was a real learning experience. I did. And I did that for 10 years and was moderately successful, but then we decided we needed another change, and my wife, she had a degree, I didn't, except an art school degree, and she said, I'll support you, I'll get a job teaching, and then you go to school and get a teaching certificate, and then we'll both be doing the same thing. She didn't like the idea of a construction worker who was gone all the time, bidding on weekends, always out bidding. So this is what we did. I thought it was a very foolish idea. We'd never recover. We did go heavily in debt, but ultimately it proved to be the right decision. We had a good time. I worked for 13 years as a teacher, and she's still a teacher. So that's been the history. I think an interesting and relevant point was my first year at university, I was asked in a basic English class to write an essay, and I thought, well, what can I write about that's exciting? And I thought about the mine. So I wrote this sort of flamboyant essay of the experience of going underground and all the mystery and drama of it. And then to moralize, I thought, well, unfortunately, I felt uncomfortable about the tailings, and I wasn't able to reconcile that, the idea of getting out this valuable resource, but still not being able to account for the blight we were leaving on the landscape. So that's something.
Was there much discussion up here amongst miners or residents or officials in the mine? Do you recall any controversy amongst people that they thought that it was an environmental problem?
I never heard any talk at all about the environment. This was just considered a necessary byproduct, and at that time, of course, it was very slight, just a little pool there. I had no idea, and I don't imagine many others did, that would eventually rise to a mountain.
Do you recall if, like Forest Service personnel or any state personnel ever came up during that? I suppose if they did, they were, no big thing was made of it, so most people wouldn't have known. But,
apparently. Yeah. I never saw them. I assume that they may have been monitoring, but it seemed like they enforced the building regulations very thoroughly. That's why they're still here. They're so well built, and they do fit in with the environment. I think it was kind of a showpiece for them, and they accepted, like everybody else did, that if you're going to mine, you're going to have a tailing pile.
Mm-hmm. What about the life in the community? Did you work a normal, like, 8-hour day when you were constructing the buildings and then have evenings free? What did you do during the off time?
Well, if you're asking what I did, of course, it was a very controlled community. So some people have asked if there were problems, and I saw none. There was no alcohol allowed, and if any was smuggled in, I never saw it. I never saw anybody drunk here in all the time I was here, and it seemed to be a model community. For entertainment, since I was young and energetic, we hiked a lot. We hiked to all the different lakes around here. We climbed the mountains. I remember we climbed Buckskin, and I never climbed Bonanza, but some of my buddies did. And I remember one night after dinner, we'd worked a full shift. We were sitting in the bunkhouse, one of those porches there, and somebody bet me that I couldn't climb Copper Mountain after dinner. And so I said, sure, I could do that, and I could do it in an hour. Now, this is the way I remember. My wife thinks I may be exaggerating, but I remember running up that mountain in an hour and waving something from the top to prove it, to win the bet. It's just the thought of that. But they had a big 4th of July celebration up at the ball field, and we threw together a team and played Chelan.
Did Did they have any regulations as far as hiking? Any off-hours activity like that, was it regulated anyway where they said you had to check out or...
None. No regulations that I recall, no.
What about, I assume you didn't have a car up here, but...
No.
Were there cars, private individuals did have cars?
I don't remember any cars, oddly enough. Just the construction trucks and then, of course, the huge ore trucks. Yeah. That's all I remember.
What about communications? Did they have any kind of communications at that time?
I don't... what do you mean by communication?
Well, I mean, could you call down lake, telephone, or you know, any type of communications like that?
No, I suppose there must have been a big company, but
you didn't have any need for.
I never had any. No. Yeah. And a few things now that occurred to me. One of them was the you spoke about controversies and so on. It wasn't about the environmental impact. It was about union rights. See, we belong to the mine, mill, and smelter workers, and I went to a few union meetings, and I was impressed with how little they knew about what they were dealing with. The union had high-paid lawyers, and the president said, okay, now we're negotiating a new contract, and he said, they've got their lawyers, and he said, we have to be able to deal with them. Is there anybody in here who knows anything about law? There was a silence, and then finally a university kid put his hand up, and he says, well, I've taken a course in business law. And he said, fine, okay, then you're our representative. And I thought, oh, dear, to deal with the company, this is not very powerful ammunition. But that's the way it was. Most of the miners complained about the food and things like that.
Did the workers have a say? Like, if they did complain, did they complain through the union?
Yes, yeah.
Was the food improved, or were there changes made, do you recall, or did you feel that the food...
I thought it was the best food I'd ever eaten, and it was so ample, it was just tremendous. And I felt that this was just like any group of men, they mm-hmm. feel...
Needed something.
Sure, it's like the army or anything like that, yeah.
Now, were there families starting up here when you were here down at Winston Camp, I think they called it?
Is this the one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just starting to build there.
But prior to that, there were no families, except in the chalets, I suppose, or in the...
That's right, yeah.
Was the school constructed and in operation at that time?
We constructed the school, but it wasn't in operation as far as I remember. It must have started after I left.
What about the gymnasium? Do you recall, was that up at that time?
No,
or was that
we built...
Later?
I was in every stage of that.
Oh.
Yeah. From the bowling alleys. I remember a Brunswick Bulk representative came out and supervised it, and it was impressive how they built that.
Yeah. Do you recall how long it took to build a building like the gymnasium? Had that been started when you were here, or was it started during the period of time when you were here?
It could have been partly framed, but I know we worked on all the interior, the bowling alley, the rest of it, and eventually piling all the sawdust in the rafters, which mm-hmm. they tell me now they've had so laboriously pull out again. Yeah.
What about, did you have any, like, fire drills?
I don't remember any. No.
Did they emphasize fire danger much through announcements, or?
I should think they must have, but I don't recall any particular emphasis.
What about communications, if they wanted to get, you know, information to you, was it by bulletin boards, or did they have some way of making announcements to the whole community? I know there were a number of bulletin boards around. There was one on the west end of the dining hall that was labeled a union information or bulletin board, and I assumed that was used. But, you know, like we now make our announcements at dinner time or meal time, and I was just curious whether there was some standard way that they communicated to the workers.
Well, that's interesting. If there was, why it's,
maybe
I've lost
through
your
foreman or supervisor.
Yes, I suppose that would be the main avenue. And another little interesting bit, too, I think, at least it was interesting to me as a young person, I was interested in whatever social life was available, and some of the company personnel had their daughters here, their families here, and I was kind of smitten with the daughter of the millwright, the one in charge of the mill operation. And in the summer, the president of Britannia Mines, I guess, I forget his name, but he would come here to spend his vacation a couple of weeks and bring his family. And he had a very attractive daughter who was very worldly. She, I think, was going to Bryn Mawr or Wellesley or something. And so they threw some neat parties at their house. They occupied a house here somewhere. I can't remember just where it is, if it's even here. And so all the young university kids would be invited. And so we had some good times here.
Did you feel any separation between, like, the professional people of the mine that lived in the houses and others that lived in the dormitories? Was there a class feeling or a status division?
Well, there may have been with the hard rock miners, but being young and full of hope and feeling for the future, why, it didn't bother me any. I realized there was a very rigid structure where the superintendent had the biggest and best house, and then they kind of went up the line till up at the upper end of the loop were the foreman and shift supervisors. But it seemed to be well handled.
So there was no major problem?
No, not that I was aware of.
What about, like, when you worked underground and you worked, I suppose, a full 8-hour shift?
Yes.
Did you take a lunch pail with
Yes.
you? And who fixed those lunches?
The mess hall crew fixed them, and they had a room off to the side that was really fantastic. When I think of it, they just have a complete smorgasbord of bread and all kinds of cuts of cheese and meat, and you could just make any kind of lunch you wanted.
So you actually went through, like, a line and put your own sandwiches together?
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then I don't know if you've been up in the dining hall, the old coffee pots are still there, and in fact, I think that the west room is still marked lunchroom.
I saw that the other day. I was prowling.
Is that where the meats and things were put
yes,
out in that room?
Yes, must have been. That it seemed familiar to me. Huh. And, of course, if you didn't happen to be going on shift, you could come around at midnight or 9 or 10 o'clock and prepare a snack, too. No one said anything.
How did you pay for your room and board?
Now, that was asked me, and I can't remember except in my mind, a figure of $1.50 a day for room and board.
And it was it deducted then from?
I think it was deducted from your check. Yes.
What about the? We've read, heard from others about the currency that they had their own tin or money.
Oh.
Maybe they didn't.
Not
when you were.
Not
were here.
I
guess
remember.
Maybe that was later on. Where?
Yeah. Huh.
So as far as you remember, they just used regular currency.
Yeah. Now they may have sold currency for gambling, because this seemed to run wide open. Apparently the company maintained a tolerance policy here to let them get it out of their system there, and I know, or at least it was common knowledge, that this was abused, that there was a person, a miner named Blackie Fox, a sort of legendary character who was obviously a professional, and he used to relieve the miners of their excess money and supposedly was shipping thousands of dollars out. But he was able to put in his shift, so they kept him.
Yeah. He was required to work in the mine?
Yes.
He couldn't just live here?
No.
Yeah. Now in what we call the village center, the gymnasium building,
yeah.
They had a snack bar in the front of that. Now, that probably wasn't in operation yet if you were still building. Did
no.
they have another area where they had ice cream or things like this where you could buy, or a lunch counter where you could buy other snacks other than the dining hall?
I can't remember that. It must have come later.
I'm sure you would have remembered it if there would have been.
I think so, yes.
No. What was, now you mentioned doing a lot of hiking. Was, I suppose, a lot of the people did hiking and fishing, in the area. Was it relatively well known for good fishing? Do you recall?
Yes, it seemed to be a mecca for fishermen and hunters and outdoor people. Now, I wasn't much into that, but just from what I heard, there were fabulous lakes around that just couldn't be beat for fishing. And I do remember pack trains coming up and stopping to be outfitted here. I suppose they had worked out some deal
with food and...
Yeah, they would pull right up to those loading docks and load up the pack horses with food and then go on up.
Did you ever meet Oscar Getty?
Now that rings a bell, but I can't remember.
He was one of the packers that he lived down at Lucerne.
Oh, yes.
And he was still alive when we first came up here and was quite a legend, and I think dates way back to 1919 or even before.
Well, undoubtedly he came through.
He might have been one of the Packers that came through. So. What about, were there many people that just came up to visit at the mine, or, tourists coming to see the area, do you recall?
I suspect that they discouraged that, since this, of course, was a company town, and they really didn't have facilities. The only outsiders that I recall were on 4th of July, when a contingent of young people would come up from Chelan just for the day to play ball and be part of the festivities. And I don't recall visitors otherwise.
Was it, you mentioned, a lot of WSU students, mining students would come here to earn money and get experience. Was it known as a reasonable place to make some money if you didn't spend it or gamble it away? Or were they paying as good a money as other places? Why were you attracted? Did you hike over wanting to get a job, or did you just happen to stumble in on it and decide to stay?
Well, I think it probably paid as well as any other comparable operation, and plus the fact that it had good facilities, and of course you were away from any place of spending it, so if you didn't gamble, it was all pure gravy, and going to school, this is what you needed. The previous summer I had worked at Cooley Dam in the early stages, and this is where I intended to return, but that had given me a certain confidence with heavy construction. But this partner of mine said, well, let's go across the mountains this time. He had worked here the previous summer, a young man named Jack Anderson, and he said they'd cleared the woods for the power line coming in and done some of the preliminary work. And he said, I think they're really going to be going now. And I said, what if they aren't then? We've taken a week to get over there. And he said, well, we'll go back and pass by Skagit. He said, we can probably get on there. So it seemed like a fairly good gamble. And I'm glad I did, because it seemed to me that I was able to sock away enough to go to school for another year in the 6 months.
Now, in the dormitories, in your living situation, were linens provided? Did you rent those? Or
no, they provided everything. Yeah. And each building had a bull cook who lived, I think, in the end room. And he took care of all the cleaning and complaints. And
so you didn't even have to clean your rooms?
No.
Oh.
No.
So towels, linens, all that was supplied,
yes,
and was changed periodically.
That's
and,
right. Very good. It was.
And that that
no
wasn't
complaints.
Too bad living. So.
No, not at all. Of course, the miners complained about it. They just, some of them did, of course.
There were always two people to a room. That was
Yes.
Were there any restrictions on, I know they brought the power in, but did they ever have shortage of power, so that they, talked about restrictions, and I suppose there weren't that many appliances in those days. So,
No.
People didn't generally have coffee pots in their rooms and
That's
things
right.
like this. So there wasn't much to use electricity.
No.
For. What about radios?
I don't remember radios. It may have been that there wasn't adequate reception.
You didn't have one
no.
yourself.
No.
What about news from the outside? Were you? Forgot about the outside?
Well, I do remember that this was the place where we were getting very concerned about Hitler's inroads. He was beginning to move toward Czechoslovakia, the Sudeten, and this was happening in 1938. So, yes, we were getting that news in some way. Maybe there was radio. I just can't recall now.
What about, I suppose, conversations during work were very similar to what they would be any place where, things like world news were talked about. Maybe this is where you got some of the, the concerns or the information.
Yeah. And I was, as I say, you tend to congregate with compatible people, and so the people that I talked with and spent my time with in the evening were generally these Washington State University students or similar young people who were concerned about these things, and sort of, they weren't really professional miners. Most of the students were engineering people who would eventually go into that end of it.
Had you been back at all? Let's see, now you were here 4 years ago, was it?
Yes, 4 years ago I came up in September or October with my wife and father.
And was that the first time you'd returned?
That's
since?
The first time, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That was a long spell in between.
It certainly was, and what an exciting thrill to see it, you know, so little changed, if anything, enhanced. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a marvelous experience.
You said you didn't travel out, you know, during the time of the year. When you left, did you go then out through Chelan and
yes.
down on the boat? And,
yes.
The normal travel
route. That's
thing,
right.
So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I guess in December it would be impossible to go back out the other way.
Yeah.
So had they started any type of skiing up here at that time, do you recall?
I don't recall any skiing, no.
I think later on they, I don't recall when it was, but I think they did have a ski area developed up behind the camp up there, but that was probably later on.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they brought in many refinements yeah. over the 20 years that it lasted.
Was the bowling alley in operation before you left? Or?
Yes, I think it was, yeah.
Well, do you recall anything else that you would like to relate?
Well, that about pretty well covers it, I think.
A lot of questions, I think.
Yeah. I do recall, I was telling someone this afternoon, as a matter of fact, the mechanic, when we were looking at your albums, the mechanic was standing there, and he was sympathetic about one of my anecdotes I told about what an ordeal it was to load this powder, this dynamite, for these weekly blasts, because it made you so sick, gives you these violent headaches. Mm. And he said, oh, yes, I know about that. He's done something similar, but it was really amazing to me what a production this was, because I think it took two or three shifts to do this loading, and they had to run, after they got the cases of dynamite as far as they could, then they would relay it man to man, so there would be 30 or 40 of us and just passing it along till finally it got to where it was going to be loaded. And one time I was on the next to the last man that was loading it in a chamber about 10 feet square, and the only access was a little what they called, I think, a fox hole or gopher hole, and it had to be small because that would have to be backfilled afterwards to compress the blast in the right direction. And so I had to lay in the middle of this on my back, and then someone would lay the stick of dynamite on my toes, and I would lift it up and it would roll down my stomach, and then I would pass it over my head to the guy that was piling it in all these cordwood piles. And then of course the blasting person, the expert, came in with this carefully handled box of nitro or whatever it was, and he would put it carefully in the middle, and then we would complete piling this up and then backfill the hole. And
was it just backfilled with rock?
With just the rock, yeah. But
hand
tightly.
All hand done.
Yeah, probably 8 or 10 feet solid rock. So there were lots of myths that were prevalent while I was here. I remember one of them was that the mine would last for 50 years, and by that time they would have the mountain pretty well hollowed out because the ore body tended to just about fill the whole inside of the mountain. And then the myth further went on that when that was done, then they would go down for another 50 years, and so the mine was going to go for the foreseeable future. And then also that they were holding the shell of the mountain up with a 50-foot diameter pillar that, even though it was in the ore body, they had to leave it to hold, keep from collapsing. And some miners, some of the authorities, were doubtful about that. They said, well, you'll see, it'll turn into a glory hole. And they said, that's when the mountain collapses, and then they can come in and use heavy equipment, and they don't have to worry about preserving anything. So
yeah,
these
in fact
were...
That, we've had some people return, some engineers, and the first thing they would ask is there a glory hole yet?
Is that
yeah,
so?
Yeah.
For
so
heaven's sake.
At first, I didn't even know what a glory hole was.
Yeah.
And, but it was interesting because two or three times people have come in and ask if there's a glory hole yet.
Hmm.
So they
there's something to
yeah,
the
yeah.
legend then.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, thank you very much. It's good to
I
have you here
this.
And good to
yeah.
have your comments. So.